Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Performance Comparison Across Three Generations of Intel Processors. I'm Kurt Schwader, technical editor at Open Systems Media, and today's moderator is speaker Jesse Chang from Lanner Electronics. Today's presentation consists of a presentation by Jesse, followed by a Q&A with you, the audience. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button will allow you to download and print slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these questions as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll talk about this a little bit more at the end of the Q&A. Our speaker today is Jesse Chang, Executive Product Planner of the Network Computing Division at Lanner. His responsibilities include driving visibility around the broader technological and economic forces acting on the network computing industry, developing an empirically grounded view of the rate of change and impact on Lanner's business development. He's also in charge of delivering critical analysis into key competitor performance, investments, and strategic imperatives for identifying new and emerging opportunities for Lanner Electronics. Prior to Lanner, Jesse was also part of Motorola's ASIC chip design division and holds a Master of Science degree in electrical engineering from the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. Jesse is also the president of Shenzhong Electrical Manufacturing Company. Jesse, the floor is yours.
Hey, thanks. Hi, everyone. My name is Jesse Chang, and I've been with Lanner for 7 years, acting as the product planner for the Network Communication Division. Today, I'm very glad to have the chance to discuss with you about the performance of our network platform. But first, I'll have a brief introduction on Lanner. Lanner is a hardware design and manufacturing company for the industrial PC. It was set up in 1986, starting as a PC components trading company. However, in the 90s, it started to build a motherboard for the IBC. And during the early 2000s, it shifted the main focus to network communication and network security appliance business, mainly because the CEO, James Young, joined the Lanner at that time. He was one of the co-founders of D-Link. He brought in the new business and new technology, and ever since, the revenue has been growing rapidly. And Lanner became publicly listed in May 2003. In that same year, Lanner also started the Beijing branch in China. Now, besides the Taipei headquarters, we also have a USA office in Fremont, Canada office in Toronto, and several offices in China. Globally, we have more than 500 employees, with almost 400 in Taiwan. For the past few years, the revenue grew significantly, especially last year, reaching $72 million. And 90% of our revenue came from Network Communication Division. Early this year, the total sales volume of networking appliances exceeds 1 million. The picture on the left-hand side is Taipei 101. It's got 101 floors and height is 508 meters. If we put all the 1 million appliances we've sold into 101 building, they could fill up to half of the building. This achievement took us about 10 years, and with the fast-growing rates, we have confidence that we could fill the other half of the building with another 5 years. at this point, we could say we are the leader as a network hardware provider because we lead the future with our foresight and originality. And we deliver intensify the value through close relationship with the value chain partner, especially with Intel. We follow Intel's technology very closely. We join Intel's every early access programs for almost every new product. And so we announce our new products following Intel's release on the products. We could say we are very familiar with all generations of Intel's new processors. That's why we are going to compare the performance of three generations of Intel's core processors through package forwarding tests. So today in my agenda, I'll start from Werner's approach to network appliance design. Then I'll compare the special features of three generations of Intel core processors, focusing on those related to performance. And I'll talk about how to test the package for forwarding through smart bits and ECR testing equipment, and finally come to the test setup and the results. Now, let's go to the first topic. I'll talk about the logic behind our hardware design. Since our products mainly focus on providing supreme performance for package and security processing, the design strategy is quite different from traditional server hardware. The picture on the top left-hand side shows the typical outlook of our products. Instead of coming out from the backside as servers usually do, or the Ethernet ports comes out from the front. And we provide quite a large number of ports, including gigabit ports and 10G ports, either in copper or fiber connection, to be balanced on both cost and the flexibility of port configuration. We normally provide some ports directly on board, and at the same time, leave some module space for the customers to select the modules fulfilling their requirements. And we build a lot of modules with different configuration, such as 2 ports, 4 ports, or 8 ports, either in gigabits or 10 G, in copper or fiber, with or without bypass, using every Intel's LAN chip. And with bypass function, we guarantee the traffic won't get blocked due to the downtime of our machine. And for the processors, we started building security appliances using Intel architecture more than 10 years ago. Intel architecture is popular because of its robust computing power and easy programming. In a networking and a security appliance, the main objectives of a processor are to provide compute, control, management, and package processing functions. And with Intel processors' high computing power, it could deliver very good performance for the first three purposes. However, for data processing, it's lacking sufficient optimization features for package processing. So when the package goes through very inefficient Linux kernel network stack, the overhead incurred will limit the data traffic performance. That's why we couldn't see line speed package forwarding for small packets, especially for 64 bytes small packets. And for security processing, we use some co-processors, such as Cavium's Nitrox, or NetLogic's NetL7 DPI processor to offload these processor consuming functions. And Intel's new optimization technologies like DPDK and the Quick Assist will greatly enhance packet and security processing, but they are out of scope here. We'll discuss those technologies in another white paper. And on the system level, we also provide redundant AC-DC powers and hot pluggable fans for high availability. And for remote management, we integrate IPMI and IPKVM remote management into our mid to high-end products. And to address the growing concerns of power and space of data center, we also developed a hybrid structure for more economical uses of power and space. Hybrid structure has been an extraordinary product for data center and high-end security market recently. To see a full functional generation 2 hybrid product, we are going to have a seminar in Santa Clara on November 8th this year, and we'll introduce this product at that time. For the time being, we'll just focus on our regular network appliances. And more than 90% of our products were based on Intel architecture. They are rack-mountable with 2U or 1U heights. And we also have entry-level desktop appliances. On the accessory list, besides the vast amount of Ethernet modules, we also provide Cadence crypto acceleration PCIe cards and Lionic DPI acceleration cards. And IPMI modules is for IPMI remote management. And out of some customer requests, we also provide some appliances based on network service processors like KVM, Cadence RTM, and Freescale's CoreIQ, Hedera's HyoGX. However, because these processors are based on RISC architecture, they didn't gain the popularity as Intel architecture due to the difficulty to program. The next page shows our typical architecture, Intel architecture mainstream roadmap. And today on our throughput test, we are going to use three of these products, FWA865, FWA760, and FWA758. They are our mass production products, and we'll use some of the modules selected from our modular list. This page shows our modular design strategy. And on the left-hand side, on the machines, use our standard modules. However, with Intel's new generation of processors, they provide more and more length of PCI Express, so we try to squeeze in more modules as in our new appliance, FWA895. It's got 8 module space, so we recently shrink the width of the module to make it narrower. Finishing discussing our design strategy, we'll talk about Intel's new generation of core processor. Every time when we meet a new Intel processor family, the TikTok strategy is brought up. Its principles are very simple. Intel upgrades in terms either the production process or the microarchitecture. And the full swing of this pendulum takes about 2 years. Back in 2009, Intel introduced the first generation core processor codenamed Mahalan, and it was built with 45 nanometer processor. And the next year, this TikTok strategy, it was migrated into Westmere processor, used with 32 nanometer process. And in 2011, with the same 32 nanometer process, Intel introduced the second generation core processor called Sandy Bridge. And this year, this new 22 nanometer process, it becomes the third generation Ivy Bridge processor. And with the shrinking process, Intel successfully integrated more and more functions into the processor die and increased the number of cores inside the processor. So from the platform perspective, we could see less and less chips on the motherboard. Before 2008, we normally saw three basic chips on Intel architecture: processor, North Bridge, and the South Bridge. And starting from 2009, the first CPUs on Manhattan microarchitecture, Bloomfield, acquired an integrated memory controller. And the next generation, Linfield, also got the PCI Express bus controller, besides the memory. And after the Clarkdale processor also received the integrated graphics core. So from 2010 up to now, Intel architecture becomes two-chip solution with a processor plus PCH. They call it platform controller hub. However, the graphics core integrated in Clarkdale processor was implemented in a separate semiconductor die with different process inside the processor package. But now with new Sandy Bridge, it's a true integration. The CPUs built on the new microarchitecture will have everything integrated into a single chip. Processor cores, graphic cores, memory controller, and the PCI Express bus controller. And Sandy Bridge, when it comes to features, it offers no compromise. The CPUs will consist of two or four processor cores with hyper-threading support, up to 8 megabytes of L3 cache memory, and a dual-channel DDR3 memory controller. And it will support 16 PCI Express 2.0 lanes, and feature modern DirectX 10.1 graphic cores. And in other words, new generation processors have everything it takes to conquer different market segments, including the high-end market. And the overwhelming integration in Sandy Bridge microarchitecture inspires other significant improvements. The microarchitecture of the computational cores has been seriously modified, and these improvements ensure that the new processors run considerably faster than their predecessors, working at the same clock speed. And Intel has also worked on lowering the heat dissipation, so Sandy Bridge CPUs are able to work at simply higher clock rates. And the new processor also supports a new AVX instruction that advanced the vector in extension, which will be required for a number of multimedia, financial, or scientific algorithms. And AVX differs from the previous SSE vector instruction set by higher operand width. It's got 256 bits instead of 128 bits. So they will allow processing large amounts of data at a lower resource expense. So Sandy Bridge can be considered a significant step forward in several directions. And next, we'll talk about the interconnection inside the processor. With the instruction on the Manhattan microarchitecture, Intel started making real steps toward increasing the level of integration in their processors. They began moving inside the CPU all of the function units that used to be on system chipsets, such as memory controller, PCI Express bus controller, and graphics core. And the CPUs also have a L3 cache. In other words, the CPU has turned not into just a local computing center, but it's turned into a bundle of numerous different complex units. Of course, this integration has a lot of benefits to it and allows increasing the performance due to shorter wait time during data transfers. But the more different units there are inside the CPU, it will be more difficult to connect them electrically. So the most difficult difficult part in this case would be the connection between shared L3 cache and the processor cores. In other words, when the developers were working on Sandy Bridge processor microarchitecture, they had to give a lot of serious thought to convenient connection between all functional units inside the processor. The formerly used a common crossbar interconnect works fine in the Helm processor, but it doesn't fit for more modular CPUs with a large number of different cores inside. So to solve the connection difficulty, Intel developed a new technology called the Ring Bus, or the computational cores, cache, graphics cores, and Northbridge elements inside the new processors are connected via special ring bus. It's supporting a QDI-like protocol and significantly reduce the number of inter-processor connections needed for signals routing. They divided the L3 cache of Sandy Bridge processor into equal banks, 2 megabytes each, and in order to ensure communication between the processor functional unit with the L3 cache via the ring bus, the original design implies that the number of these banks equals the number of processor cores. But for marketing reasons, they can disconnect some banks from the bus without any damage to the cache integrity. Scalability to the number of processor cores is not the only advantage of the ring bus. The latency of the L3 cache has also gone down. And since data transfers along the ring takes the shortest route, and now the L3 cache latency is 26 to 31 clock cycles, while the L3 cache in the Helm processors offers 35 to 40 clock latency. And all cache memory in Sandy Bridge works at a processor frequency. This is another reason why it has become faster. And another advantage of the Ring Bus is its ability to also include a graphic core integrated into the processor to the general data transfer route. It means that the graphic core in Sandy Bridge doesn't work directly with the memory, but like the processor core, it's via L3 cache. This way it works faster and also eliminates the negative effects on the overall system performance caused by the graphics core trying to take part of the memory bus from the processor core. And another function block called the system agent. It contains all external interface controllers like PCI Express, EMI, memory, and display interface. In fact, this system agent is very similar to core in the Helm processors. But system agent in Sandy Bridge doesn't contain the L3 cache, which is an individual functional unit working at the processor frequency in the new microarchitecture. And another distinguishing feature of this system agent is that it also uses the ring bus to exchange data with the processor and the graphics cores as well as with the L3 cache. In system agents, the memory controller also is a great advantage compared to the Westmere processor. And the PCI Express bus controller in Sandy Bridge is similar to the same controller in LGA 1156 processors. It supports 16 PCI Express 2.0 lanes, and it can be either from a single PCIe by 16 bus or two PCIe by 8 bus. and all functional units of the Sandy Bridge CPUs are split into three domains, each using its own independent clocking and powering algorithms. The first primary domain contains processor cores and L3 cache working at the same frequency and the voltage. And the second domain is the graphics cores working at its own frequency. And the third domain is the system agent itself. And in addition to the new green bus and integration technology, the performance improvements of Sandy Bridge mainly comes from architectural change itself. There are a lot of micro-architectural changes that allow Intel engineers to increase the performance of their processors while lowering their power consumption and the heat dissipation. And the first important improvement in the micro-architecture is the addition of decoded micro-op cache. When x86 instructions are decoded into simpler processor micro-ops, the actual decoder remains the same as in Manhattan. Its processor four instructions per clock cycle and supports microfusion and the microfusion technology. That makes the output instruction thread more even in terms of execution complexity. But the processor instructions decoded into micro operations are not just transferred to the next processing stage. It's also cached. In other words, in addition to the regular 32K bytes L1 cache for instructions, Sandy Bridge also has an additional L0 cache for storing the decoding results. And this cache is the first of flashback from that first microarchitecture. Its general operation principles make it similar to the execution trace cache. And the decoded micro-op cache is about 6 kilobytes thick and can store up to 1,500 micro-ops, which make it of great help to the decoder. And if the decoder discovers instructions that have been translated earlier and are now stored in the cache, it will replace them with internal micro-operations without performing any new decoding. So this decoder micro-op cache helps to take a big load of the decoder, which is a pretty energy-hungry part of the CPU. So according to Intel, this additional cache comes in handy in about 80% of cases, which makes us suspicious about its inefficiency absolutely unjustified. Besides, when the decoder in Sandy Bridge is idle, it is disabled to help lower the CPU power consumption. For the second important improvement in the pipeline stage is the branch prediction unit. Because you can't underestimate the importance of proper functioning of this unit, because every incorrect branch prediction requires stopping and cleaning the pipeline. So as a result, the prediction mistakes not only have a negative effect on performance, but also use additional power for filling up the pipeline all over again. So I have to say that Intel managed to make this unit extremely efficient in their new processors. However, they modified all the Sandy Bridge buffers used to store branch addresses and the prediction history in order to increase the data density in them. As a result, Intel is able to store longer branching history without increasing the size of data structures used by the branch prediction unit. And that has a great effect on the branch prediction unit's efficiency, which is directly connected with the amount of static data about executing the branches that it works with. And the branch prediction correctness in Stanley Bridge improved by more than 5% compared with the predecessor. Next, I'll talk about Intel's new generation core processor. It's Ivy Bridge. And Ivy Bridge processors were just released early this year. This is the first processor using Intel's 22-nanometer manufacturing process. Besides the shrinking the process, Intel also used tri-gate transistors instead of planar transistors in this process. Although simply continuing to shrinking its existing transistor technology to 22-nanometer would have been possible, but the move from planar to tri-gate transistor delivers a much more significant improvement, as well as boosts to performance and power efficiency. The move to tri-gate transistor boosts the transistor density of Intel's 22-nanometer processor to around twice of that of 32-nanometer. Where a Sandy Bridge processor packs approximately 1.16 billion transistors into a die, Ivy Bridge puts about 1.4 billion transistors into the die, and the die is smaller, about 25% smaller than the Sandy Bridge. Besides the process, Ivy Bridge is in general mostly the same as Sandy Bridge. It continues to be two-chip platform with a CPU plus a PCH connected through DMI interface, and is also fully integrated with processor cores, graphics, memory controllers, and the PCI Express controller on the same semiconductor die. And the most advantageous for us as a board designer is its backwards compatible sockets. So we could plug in Ivy Bridge CPU directly into Sandy Bridge board with a little modification on the BIOS. And that means we don't have to build a new board for Ivy Bridge CPUs. And of course, with new process, the most significant advantage of Ivy Bridge CPU is higher performance with lower power. And in addition, it's got much better performance with the new graphics controller. But graphics is not our concern in networking appliances, so we won't talk much about this. This page shows the embedded CPU list for the three generations of Intel core processors. And we could get a general feeling about how these CPUs look like from this table. Now, we come down to the final section of this presentation, the package for wording tests. Since most of various research and development resources are focused on network appliance hardware, so whenever Intel announces a new architecture with promising improvements in network throughput, it puts their claims to the test. Increase the bandwidth and the performance of each of these new Intel network controllers, along with the chipset PCH and the CPUs, it's often the foundation of new product lines as vendor. And we normally focus our tests on package forwarding only. We would like to be able to test on the security features, but we are simply a hardware company. Without the help of our source of software, package forwarding is the only performance test we could do now. And on the package forwarding test, we use both SmartBit and ECR to do the test. And for testing, Lambda engineers use the SmartBit package engine using the generator to create packet traffic. And it creates and tests for both the received and transmitted traffic. And it's capable of using both 1 gigabit and 10 gigabit links. And as you may know, data plane packet processing puts pressure on the system bus as data is being moved back and forth between the I/O device and the system memory. And our tests are designed to maximize this throughput to try to bottleneck the system. In essence, trying to break the system so we can learn the limitations. And on the following test, we try to compare the packets for forwarding performance using different generations of CPUs. There are two series of tests. The first one compares the Manhattan with Sandy Bridge processors, and the second one compares the Sandy Bridge with Ivy Bridge processors. On the first test, we compare the performance between Manhattan and Sandy Bridge CPUs. We compare two different platforms in terms of network throughput. The first platform was Lanner's FWA758. It's an Intel Sugar Bay platform with PCH X61. It supports both Sandy Bridge and Ivy Bridge CPUs. And there are 6 gigabit Ethernet ports on board using Intel A25A3V LAN chip. And it also has a module space for Ethernet module. We use the port on the module to do the test. And the second platform was FWA760. It's Intel Fox Hollow platform with the Intel IFX Peak 3450 chipset. It supports first generation Manhattan core processors. And there are 8 gigabit Ethernet ports on board using Intel A2574 LAN chip. Just like FWA758, it's also equipped with a module space. And we use the same modules as we use on FWA758 to have a fair comparison. The Manhattan processor we chose for FWA760 was Core i5-660, running at 3.33 GHz plus speed. And it was 2 cores and 4 threads and 4 megabytes LL3 cache. And the Sandy Bridge CPU we chose for FWA758 was Intel Core i5-2400 with 4 cores and 4 threads, running at the clock speed of 3.1 GHz. Because we are in Intel's embedded segment, so we have a limited selection of CPUs. And although the CPUs that we chose have different clock frequencies, cache size, and the core numbers, they are both core i5 in different generations. And so they are the closest we could get for the comparison. And for both platforms, we use 2 modules of 4 gigabytes DDR3 RAM for a total of 8 gigabytes of memory. And with these 2 platforms, we did 3 tests. 2 of them are gigabit ports, tests with 2 and 4 ports. And the other one is 2 port 10 G tests. And for the first and second test, we test the gigabit ports on the module IG425A. The LAN chip used are Intel A2580DB. And both tests were set up to see the line rate percentage of packets sent over 1 gigabit Ethernet interface. And each platform was tested with 2 ports and 4 ports, operating at 4 line rates and set for duplex forwarding mode. And each load test was repeated with different frame size. Each test running for 30 seconds, tests were conducted using common packet size such as 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024, and 1280, and finally 1518. The testing results were very similar for both two ports and four ports. For packet size equal and bigger than 128 bytes, we achieved 100% line rates for both platforms. For 64 bytes small packets, the throughput were not able to reach 100% line rate for both 2 and 4 port tests. But SandyBridge processors showed about 25% improvement over first generation processor. And the third test was set up to see the line rate percentage of packets over two ports of 10 gigabit Ethernet interface. And each platform was tested for a period of 30 seconds. We used the module NCMISN203A. The LAN chips used are Intel A2599ES. On this test, it could reach 100% line rate only with 18 large packets. And with other packets, it was very clear that SandyBridge processor performed about 25% to 35% better than Mehalem processor. So from package forwarding test, we could conclude that SandyBridge processor is 25% to 35% better than the Mehalem processor in packet processing. And next, we'll take a look at the comparison between SandyBridge and Ivy Bridge processors. And on this comparison, we'll use FWAA65, which is Intel for a Moro platform with C206 Cougar Point PCH. It supports full range of both SandyBridge and Ivy Bridge core processors, and even E3 series Xeon processors. We designed this platform with three module space, but the first module we fixed with four ports using Intel new generation LAN chip i350AM2. Out of those four ports, two of them are connected to the PCH D206, and the other two are connected to the CPU. And we conducted two tests using different LAN chips. The first one, we used a fixed LAN port on the first module space, using i350AM2. And the second one, we use the module NCM IGM A02A with LAN chips A2576EB on the second module space. And on both tests, we compare the performance with different CPUs. We use the E3 1275 from SandyBridge, and it's running at 3.4 gigahertz. It's got 4 cores and 8 threads, and 8 megabytes of LL3 cache. And we also use E3-1275V2 from Ivy Bridge. It's running at 3.5 gigahertz with 4 cores and 8 threads, and 8 megabytes of LL3 cache. And both tests were set up to see the run rate percentage of packets sent over 1 gigabit Ethernet interface. Just like in our previous test, each was tested with 4 ports operating as 4 line rates and set to duplex forwarding mode. Each load test was repeated with different frame size. and each test running for 30 seconds. So from the testing results, it's very similar for both LAN chips. For I350 AM2, it's about 3% better than A2576EB. But for package size equal and bigger than 128 bytes, we could achieve 100% line rate for both LAN chips with different CPUs. But for 64 bytes small packets, Ivy Bridge processor showed about 5 to 8% performance improvement over Sandy Bridge processors. So we could conclude that Ivy Bridge CPU is around 8% better in package processing performance compared with Sandy Bridge CPU. And now we are coming down to the end of this presentation. And for the past few years, Intel has devoted a lot of efforts trying to improve the package and security processing in Intel architecture. They focus not just on the hardware. They also developed a software package called DBDK to improve the performance of package processing. Besides, they keep working on quick assist technology for security processing. They also added a DDIO function to high-end Sandy Bridge EP processor to improve IO performance. And those new technologies will be our next topic for our white paper and the webinar. And today, thanks for everyone joining this webinar. Hope to meet you again in our next webinar. And please come to our seminar in Santa Clara on November 8th. There's my contact information on the last page. If you have more questions to discuss with me, please contact me. So now we'll get into Q&A section.
Very good. Thanks, Jesse. We are at the Q&A. We invite you to submit questions if you haven't already. We'll get to as many as we can. First, Jesse, there's a question on the Intel DPDK that you had, Data Plane Development Kit. Can you talk a little bit more about what kinds of things you would expect to find in that kit?
Okay. DPDK is a software package developed by Intel to improve the package forwarding performance in Intel architecture. Just like I mentioned before, it's always very inefficient for Intel architecture to handle small packets. It's mainly because in Linux environments, packets got to go through network stack inside the Linux kernel. And for some other risk network processor, they have optimized the way to process packets, just like in NetLogic's XLR and XLS, they have the IMIOS.
Uh-huh.
And in Cavium's Actium, they have the simple exec. They just bypass the regular Linux stack to handle the package. But in Intel architecture, because they don't have this kind of optimization process, so it's a normally we could only see we couldn't see the line speed for the small packet. So for the past 2 years, Intel started developing DPDK for packets to bypass the network stack. And Intel created a POMO driver to handle the packet. Instead of waiting for the interrupt, processor will keep waiting for the packet coming to the port. And Intel also created a whole bunch of data plane library to process the data. This library includes a memory management, buffer management, and queue management, and package flow classification. So this way, Intel architecture can have much better performance with DBDK.
Right, okay. I see. Very good. There's a question about slide 9. I'll pull it up here quickly. There's a block on there called DPI, Deep Packet Inspection, and it's in the accelerator row. Can you elaborate on, do you intend that to be silicon-assisted software, or how does that, what functionality does that DPI block include, or could it include?
From the DPI, because the DPI is very important for the IPS application, it's a deep packet inspection. And normally in the past, most of the software company, they will use the processor to do the computation for the DPI.
Right.
But that will all occupy a lot of CPU resources. So some company like Lionic, and there's a sensory network, and there's also a Terrari later purchased by LSI. Those companies, they work on some way to offload the DPI computation into the chip. But up to now, I didn't see very successful way of doing it.
Yeah.
Now, in Intel's new Crystal Forest platform, they originally tried to put that function inside the Cape Creek. But recently, they found out even with the computation on the processor, it will be even more efficient than offload that into the chip. So they take out that part from the Cape Creek chipset. And now I know there are some companies working on software way to do it more efficiently with the software. Just like there's Cosmos in France, and in Taiwan there's BroadWeb. They work very close with Intel. For that part.
I see. Okay. You mentioned the AVX instruction set. Does that require a compiler that knows to generate these instructions in order to take advantage of it, or do you get libraries that already have software that links to this AVX acceleration instruction set, or how do you make use of that?
For the AVX, I'm sorry, I'm not very get into the detail on that part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so for that, I probably got to get more information from Intel.
Okay. Well, that's very good. We can point them at Intel if they want to know about that. Here's a question about the what is the kernel versions of embedded Linux running in your products, or can you talk a little bit in general about the operating system in your networking products and kind of how you manage the releases in there?
Normally, because we have a software department, they are working on the drivers and on the bootloader and the BIOS for the basic software architecture. We normally support the Linux from 2.4 and up.
Uh-huh.
And we also support the Windows.
Okay. Very good. Here's a question about, they were asking about the two 10 gigabit tests that you were doing. Which two 10 gigabit modules did you use with the FW8758 for the comparison test? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Do you remember which slide that was?
Yeah, let me find that slide.
Probably find it.
For the 10G ports, we use our NCM IXM2038.
Uh-huh.
It uses Intel's chip A2599ES.
Okay. All right, very good. There's a question about which of your products have Intel DPDK features and which products have the Intel DDIO features. Am I be a hard question to ask because of the breadth of the product line, but can you maybe just talk a little bit about, in general, which product lines you would potentially include the data plane development kit in and so on?
Yes, for the DDIO, it's a data direct IO. And Intel put that into the Sandy Bridge EP. That's the more high-end product. We have a product called FWA95 that's using Sandy Bridge EP.
Okay.
For that product, for data direct IO, it's try to offload. Regularly in the past, all the packets coming in from the ports will go through the PCI Express interface and then go to the memory. And when the CPU tries to process the data, then it will get the data from the memory into the cache and then go to the CPU. And moving the data between the memories is normally will create a lot of overhead. So Intel eliminates this part, lets the packets go through the cache directly, didn't go to the memory. Because on the Sandy Bridge EP CPU, the memory, the cache size is 20 megabytes. So it's much bigger than those in the past. This way, it will improve the I/O performance for about 2.3%. But it will be in the most high-end product. And for the DBDK, because this product is just a software. Actually, it can work on every Intel architecture as long as it's got a multi-core. So even for the entry-level products like Atom E525, it can take this advantage. But it's just a software package. Intel will support, will release the source code freely to the customer, but Intel won't do any support. So if you have questions about DPDK, they don't give you the answer. So they encourage the customers to go to someone like WindRiver and SigSwift. And for Leonard, we have a developed some parts of the DPDK, just like we improved some of the drivers. And we can answer some of the questions, but not go into much of the details.
I see. Okay. Well, very good. Unfortunately, that brings us to the conclusion of the eCast Hour. Thank you very much, Jesse, for a really enlightening presentation on performance comparisons between three generations of Intel Core processors. And all of us here also want to thank you, the audience, for attending today's eCast and contributing those questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. Note that an audio-only podcast version will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.